This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This episode of The Chris Johnston Show is brought to you by Factor. Get started on your resolutions with Factor so you're ready for the new year. Factor's ready-to-eat meal delivery takes the stress out of meal planning and sets you up for success in the new year. Skip the grocery stores, prep work, and cooking fatigue. Instead, get chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals delivered right to your door. With over 35 meals to choose per week, including options like keto, calorie smart, vegan and veggie, and more, plus over 55 weekly add-ons, you'll have a ton of nutritious and flavorful options to kickstart your resolutions. Forget the frantic lunches and the rushed dinners. The two-minute meals from Factor are your secret weapon in the new year. You get to fuel up with fast, restaurant-quality meals, all delivered right to your door. Seriously, so many benefits to come with using Factor. And if you take advantage of the deal we've got with the CJ Show, you'll be on your way. Head to factormeals.com/Johnston50 and use code Johnston50 to get 50% off. That's code Johnston50 at factormeals.com/Johnston50 to get 50% off.
I know that some in our audience know the finer points of hockey.
The Chris Johnston Show.
We are your friends.
The biggest stories, bringing you inside the game.
What did you hear?
The Chris Johnston Show.
What is going on?
Here's Chris with your host, Julian McKenzie.
Part of the game.
You know the name. You know the number. William Nylander, a Toronto Maple Leaf, signing an extension for 8 years. 11.5 is the AAV. $92 million. That's the number his dad wore, Michael Nylander. We got to get into this contract. This is a story that we've been following for how many months? It finally reaches its end on a Monday. CJ, what do you think of the contract?
You know, William Nylander negotiated with his stick, my friend.
He did.
You know, these contracts talks probably go back almost 7 months. And a lot's changed in terms of William Nylander's place in the game, the kind of player he's become in that time. Certainly no shade directed at the previous versions of him. We've seen him take some leaps forward the last two seasons. I think last year in particular was his strongest year as an NHL player to that point. That kind of set the table for what were contract talks that started in June at the draft in Nashville. But, you know, clearly what's happened to start this year has changed, you know, where this ended up. I don't think there's any way around that fact. And ultimately, the Leafs looked at this situation. They've got an elite player. He still presumably got prime years ahead of him. He had the ability to walk out the door if he so chose on July 1st. And they're still very much what they hope are in a window to contend for the Stanley Cup, having got the Austin Matthews extension done prior to the season. And so I think the Leafs were in kind of a no-win situation when it got to this point around the middle of the season. I mean, William Nylander has points in 33 of 37 games this year. As we record this, he's fifth in the league, tied with Connor McDavid in the scoring race. You know, if you let a player like that walk out the door, how are you going to replace him? And you know, I'm sure we'll dig into the numbers and how they got there and why they make sense or don't make sense. But I think ultimately, if we're looking for how we got here today, is that Nylander played so well, he gave them no choice but to essentially meet his asks in this negotiation.
Where should we go next with this? Because there's so much to unpack with William Nylander. We could talk about whether or not that number Like, what does he have to do to justify being paid that number? We can talk about how if the fact that the Leafs were willing to basically give him everything. We didn't even mention the full no move for the full 8 years. It feels as if William Nylander took all the leverage given to him and he maxed that all out. He won in the negotiations here. I know
he was always going to win. He was always going to
right
win
on that.
Like, he's an elite talent entering a UFA year. If a player in that position and his agent or agents are willing to use that leverage, they have all the leverage. What can you do when it comes time for Leon Draisaitl to enter his final year or Connor McDavid potentially? I mean, if any of those players don't sign in the summer preceding their final year, I mean, the players dictate what happens next. I mean, it's even, I guess, even more powerful in the guys I just mentioned off the top of my head. They have full no movement clauses, so they can also block their ability to go anywhere else. And so Nylander had all the leverage, and you're right, he used it. I don't think I can't blame him for that, honestly. You know, I think that he had to fight pretty damn hard for his second NHL deal, including missing a third of that 2018-19 NHL season. And he ended up taking a far more team-friendly contract than his peers, right? Auston Matthews and Mitch Marner took immediately afterwards. They didn't really take anything that would look like a discount. You know, I'm not even besmirching those players, but if you're Nylander and you've seen that, then you've seen the way the last four playoff years have gone. I mean, he basically has been the equal or even the better of those two teammates in terms of production, and also John Tavares, you know, who came in, it's a different contract. He signed his UFA at $11 million, but you know, he's seen players paid more than him, not delivering measurably more than him, at least when it came in those playoff years. Obviously, as I mentioned, the last 2 years were really strong for him. And then he starts this season the way he has, where he's leading the team by a fair margin in points. You know, there's no discount to be given, even though he did want to stay. I believe from the outset he said that, but he had all of the leverage. The Leafs had two choices. Well, I guess they had three choices. One, give him what he wants. That's the door they opened up and walked through. Two, potentially look at trading him. But how does that make any sense in a year where you're trying to win a Stanley Cup? I mean, people should understand, if you're trading William Nylander at this stage of his career, you're not getting William Nylander back. You're probably not getting anything close to William Nylander back. So all you're really gaining is the cap space for the remainder of this year. I suppose they could have done it last summer. But who are you signing as a free agent? I mean, players of William Nylander's quality and age just don't become available in today's NHL in free agency almost ever. And the Leafs don't have a lot of assets in which they could execute a trade. That might be the only other way they could have tried to replace him. And then three, of course, they could have just, you know, kept them for this season, walked them out the door on July 1st, and then we'd immediately all be focused on how they're going to replace him. So I think I'm not defending the contract, but I think we have to be very clear about the context under which it was signed, that I don't think the Leafs had any other choice myself. Like, if you're in their spot, they've got Auston Matthews signed for 4 years beyond this one. I mean, at minimum, that should be your cup window, right? The amount of time Auston Matthews, again, in his prime, he's got 30 goals in 36 games to this point of the season. You know, while he's still a top player in the league, as long as he's signed to your team, that you have to be trying to win every year. And I don't think there is any way for the Leafs not to give Nylander this kind of deal and still give himself the best chance at winning. Now, there's still decisions to be made moving forward, right? This is only one of a series of dominoes that are going to have to fall in the next year to 18 months for Leafs management in terms of navigating the near future here. But, you know, with the way Nylander played, I think he left them no other way. I mean, the only way this could have worked out for the organization is if he struggled this season, which can happen for lots of reasons, or maybe he gets injured, right? I mean, there's still risk for a player entering a contract here without a deal. This could have went the other way, I suppose, if either of those conditions were in place. But instead, the guy started the year with a 17-game point streak. He actually came back from Sweden, had three games without a point, and he's only missed one other game where he didn't get a point all season long. I mean, it's been a dominant virtuoso performance. You can't point to it. He's not just riding the backs of his talented teammates. Obviously, that helps, sharing a power play with them, for example. But he's been a driver. He's been the Leafs' most consistent player. And they were staring down the barrel here, that he could have just walked out the door in 6 months' time if they didn't reach this deal.
So starting 2024-2025, you're going to have a team with Auston Matthews making $13.25 million, John Tavares making $11 million in the final year of his deal, Mitch Marner making $10.9 million the final year of his deal, and then 11.5 for William Nylander. That is a lot for four players. That is a lot for a team that has been classified as top heavy. And is that the is I know we've kind of touched on that, but last time we talked about William Nylander, about some of the contracts that could be coming and going and how they could fill up those spots. But isn't that still an area of concern? Like, how are they going to be able to fill up the roster? Is it going to be just you're relying on the three, maybe four, depending on what you do with John Tavares going forward and signing guys to 1 year deals like a Tyler Bertuzzi or a Max Domi? What about the rest of the roster?
Well, what hasn't changed is if whether this works or not, whether the Leafs win or not, it's going to be on the backs largely of those players, right? And obviously hockey's a team game. You know, there's 25 players right now in the Leafs organization that are playing, you know, games regularly for them. You know, other players do contribute throughout the course of a season, but whether or not this works in the playoffs comes down to if those players can pull them through a series. And you know, they did it against Tampa last year. The Leafs top guns were all very productive in that series and helped them, you know, get through a 6-game series win against the Lightning. Some of the offense or a lot of it dried up pretty quickly against the Panthers in round two. And look, they're out in 5 games. I don't think it's a coincidence. If you're going to, you know, they're now looking at devoting next season, assuming no changes to that core, it's 53% of the available dollars, even with the cap going up by 5% next year. 53% of the available dollars are now tied up in the Leafs' top four forwards entering next year. And so, you know, really there's two avenues I think that they can at least look at. I mean, need to be clear. I don't think they're looking at any of this now. I think that what this is about is, okay, you get Nylander signed. That's kind of a future piece. You just know where it lands. You know what it is. Obviously, it's 2 months today till the trade deadline. So in the short term, they'll be looking at ways they can try to add to the team. Although I don't get the feeling the Leafs are necessarily poised to be big deadline players this year, just between not having the right assets to do it. Cap space is probably going to be a challenge depending on how the injury situation looks come then. This summer, essentially, when Bradshaw Living seen how the rest of the movie plays out, how the back half of the regular season goes, what happens in the playoffs, you know, might instruct what they do this summer. But, you know, they're going to be in a similar spot with Mitch Marner next year. You know, for all the reasons I said, Nylander had the leverage in this negotiation. I mean, I hate to break it to you, Mitch Marner is going to have the leverage next summer for all the same reasons. And I know by his standards, this year has been a bit of an off year for him. You know, he's still going to have an off year that looks like it's going to be well above a point a game. And he's done that a number of times already in his career. I mean, he's going to be in a tremendous spot. He's got a full no movement clause. So even if the team, for whatever reason, decided, hey, instead of signing you to whatever you want, we want to move you, I mean, he still has consent there. You know, John Tavares is entering the final year of his deal next year. He also has a no movement clause. Can't imagine he'd be that eager to waive it. You know, given his decision to come home, the wearing the captain's C, and you know, I would think he's probably going to be of a mind to maybe negotiate something beyond that point that you know helps the team out in some regards moving forward. But yeah, I mean, there's no getting around the fact that a team that was already being criticized for being top heavy is going to be more top heavy next season, unless we see some kind of move in the near term, or I guess in next off season to ship out, you know, I guess would be either Marner or Tavares, which, you know, I don't think is that likely, but I don't want to be out here making bold predictions 6 months before anyone even, you know, management doesn't really have to think about that too seriously right now. I mean, I'm sure they obviously know that the potential doors they might have to open or the paths they might have to walk down, but well, let's see how the playoffs go. I mean, if the Leafs win the Stanley Cup this year, this is probably all pretty moot. And if they go out in the first round and it's kind of meek, well, then look out for that media day after the season ends.
If they win the Stanley Cup at least once in that 8-year span for Nylander's contract, is the contract worth it? Is that enough? What needs to justify that contract?
For me, it would be, you know, I don't know how Brad Treliving might answer that, but let's face it. What has this whole era really been about? I mean, Nylander, he's kind of a symbolic player, right? He was drafted the year that Randy Carlyle's team was the 18-wheeler off the cliff. Yes. That season, it's funny. I just was looking this up for a story I'm working on. But that season, the Leafs held a playoff spot on March 13th of that year. I mean, pretty close to the end zone. And they lost 7 games in a row in regulation from that point. That was the 18-wheeler off the cliff. They end up with the 8th overall draft pick. They made a pretty savvy pick in nabbing Nylander there. That was the first pick made after Brendan Shanahan had took over as team president. And, you know, it's been an era from that point. Obviously, they went to more of, wouldn't say a full scale tank, but you know, a little tanky there to try to get Austin Matthews. That worked out for them. Obviously, getting Mitch Marner with the fourth overall pick in 2015 helped. But this kind of era has been, you know, that's we're going taking you back 10 years to where the sort of building started, that the first blocks were put in place. It took a long while, say, for those players to become truly impactful NHLers. You know, but it's all about ending the Leafs' long Stanley Cup drought. And sure, you'd like to say it's going to take two or three banners. I mean, everyone wants to be a Pittsburgh or a Chicago or a Tampa from this previous era. But I mean, if we're being realistic, I don't think Washington's too upset that they only got one. I mean, of course they were trying to win every year, but they had a great team for a long time and they got the job done once. I think it justifies everything that happened. And so I would be of the view, if the Leafs could get the job done at some point, you know, especially when they had this core put together, I mean, then it would answer that question, right? I see everyone saying, well, only one team, Vegas, has won with an eight-figure player on the roster, and the Leafs are going to have four as of next season. Well, it would at least answer the question, it's possible if they wind up doing it. So, you know, for Nylander to make this deal look good, I think he's got to be an elite player, I would say, for six of the seasons. You know, ideally, it's through at least the period where you have Austin Matthews signed. So that would be at least four more. But, I mean, let's face it, you sign an eight-year contract, you're not forecasting the guy to fall totally off a cliff. It's not a question that Nylander's skills will diminish over those 8 years, or that his impact will likely be diminished, you know, just by him slowing down, or the quality of players coming up, the younger guys in the league sort of pushing him down the food chain a little bit. It's just a question of how far down he is by the end of it. And you know, he's signed through age 36. There are examples of players that are 36 in the league that still make a pretty strong impact on a nightly basis. You know, if he can stay among that group, then I think we won't look back on this. I mean, the other factor is a bit beyond the Leafs' control, but if the cap keeps jumping up by a big margin each year, I think the weight of this won't seem as heavy, because you're going to see lots of players sign for more than $11.5 million. You know, he's not going to be in that group of top five or six in the whole league, which he is on this day as he signs it. But, you know, there could be a world in 3 years' time that, you know, another 10 players have raced by him. I mean, I think a lot of that will be cap dependent. There's nowhere to hide now. I don't think he's the sort of guy to hide. I think one of the reasons I don't hate the bet from the Leafs end is that he's really proven that he can perform under the spotlight in Toronto. He's been, as I mentioned, pretty consistent playoff performer for them on a team that's can't always say that at the end of a round. Like, even, you know, a couple of those years, that Montreal series, when you're like, okay, where were the goals? Like, Nylander was a pretty consistent force through a series like that one. So, you know, I think that there's at least some confidence there. And then obviously he's getting better. Now, the challenge is, you know, he played 500 plus games before this season at a certain level, pretty damn good level of 40 goals last year, 87 points, but that's sort of, you know, Philip Forsberg territory. You know, as we record this, he's on pace for 47 goals and 120 points. I mean, that's how you end up with, you know, the fifth highest AAV in the league at the time of your signing, because, you know, you're getting into special territory now. But, you know, it's only 37 games, and I'm sure there's I'm sure even as Brad Treliving signed this deal and he's excited to keep a good player, there's a little nerves that, is this just a, you know, this one crazy year, or is this truly the sign of growth that could continue? And only time will be able to answer that question.
My next question is more, it's less about the player, less about what he's done on the ice. It's more about you and reporting on this story and following it. Like, what's it been like for you, like, these last few months, just trying to get as much details as you can, just basically waiting on the other shoe to drop when it comes to covering William Nylander? What's it been like for you these last few months?
I mean, it's been interesting, right? My first memory of this really being front burner was the draft in Nashville. And at that point in time, the Leafs and Nylander's camp sort of exchanged their positions during a meeting there. And there was a huge gap there. I think it was about $2.5 million, maybe even $3 million, in terms of what the player wanted. I think even from that initial meeting, as best as I can glean, Nylander was focused on an $11 million contract. I think the Leafs were more at that time thinking something in the eights. Which, you know, is sort of, as I mentioned, it's kind of a Philip Forsberg-esque deal. And, you know, the gap was so wide that, you know, they didn't get any traction out of that. You know, it just kind of sat there. And, you know, part of that is you had Brad Treliving, a new GM on the scene. obviously he went into July 1st and was making the signings he did then. You know, then there was the Matthews negotiation in terms of getting Austin's extension done, which happened near the end of August. And so that sets the table for arriving back kind of in September when William Nylander returns to Toronto before training camp. And his deal, like, there's really been no progress made. There haven't been a lot of talks. You know, Nylander himself actually told reporters, he said the only time he had some degree of doubt about whether this would turn out the way he wanted, which was to stay in Toronto, was that period in the summer where, you know, they just, you know, it's a new GM. He doesn't know what that guy thinks. There weren't a lot of negotiations happening at that point in time. So I think he had enough time to wonder if it would happen. And then the season starts. And this is a long ago storyline for us. But on the first day of training camp, the Leafs came out and said, William Nylander is going to be moved to center this year. You know, we need him to play that position. And, you know, that ultimately didn't last. It was an experiment that's been tried in the past and was sort of a short-lived experiment this year. But immediately he was put in a position where he's now in a contract year. He's facing questions about that, naturally. It's a big story as camp begins. And, you know, the Leafs are maybe playing him somewhere he's not totally comfortable. I mean, it was a time where you had to wonder how would Nylander respond to that. And that's where I say he let his stick do the negotiating, because the way he played really right from the first day of the season kind of left you no doubt, A, that it was not a distraction. It was not causing him any grief. And, you know, I think really, you know, I'll maintain he had the leverage all along, but his leverage got even stronger when he put up the kind of start he did to the year. And so, you know, the Leafs and William's agent, Lewis Gross, you know, both were pretty consistent throughout this process of not revealing too much. I think that they both prioritize as much as they can. I know it's kind of ironic to say that, because by the end, you know, it was a pretty well-known secret, we'll call it, that this contract was going to get done and where the number was going to be. But, you know, throughout the back and forth that they had over the last 2 or 3 months, there wasn't a whole lot coming out there. You know, you get little updates if you inquired, you know, still working at it. Things are, you know, I always had the sense it was positive. But, you know, it's been an interesting one to navigate. And, you know, really, if anyone looking to second guess the Leafs, I'd say the only point where you could second guess them was there was probably an ability to get more aggressive over the summer and sign him maybe in the tens. But, you know, he was asking through his agent for 11 right out of the gate. And so I don't know how that would have looked. It's an alternate universe that was never really explored, because it doesn't sound like a lot of traction got going in those days. But, you know, maybe there was a world he signs this deal in the summer in the tens on an 8-year deal. You know, he ends up at 11.5. But who knows? He might not have moved off 11. The one thing I can tell you for sure, Julian, Nylander's camp had a lot of confidence that had he gone to free agency, that there were going to be multiple teams out there looking to pay him $11 million. You know, it's not to say that they knew this team and that team, but, like, I think that they could figure out the marketplace enough. They're looking at a league where the cap is going up a lot, and so there are teams now with cap space. Obviously, he would fit the needs of all kinds of teams. You know, I think of, like, Anaheim. Like, Anaheim's an organization, you know, trying to turn things around, all these young players, but you can't tell me they wouldn't at least have interest in trying to get someone like Nylander. What about Montreal? You know, another team that has, you know, I think a nice collection of young players and prospects, but maybe are missing an elite scoring kind of player. Like you'd think that they would be making a call. I mean, what about Pittsburgh, Kyle Dubas? And you know, we could probably go down a list, but there was going to be teams out there that were going to give him a big number in free agency. And so that also makes you feel confident. Like, yes, he wanted to stay in Toronto, but there's a limit to that. I mean, loyalty cuts both ways. And, you know, he played on the most team friendly second contract of the Leafs kind of star players. And, you know, factoring him in with Matthews and Marner, you know, he deserved to be paid 3 out of 3 at the time, based on where they were each at when they signed those second deals. But, you know, he had to sign first, and then he sees Marner get almost $4 million more. He sees Matthews get, you know, $5.5 million more. You know, so I can't imagine that he was in any mood to be thinking about. I mean, I know people kick around the idea of a hometown discount. Let's remember too, players' careers are awfully short, and a lot had to go right for William to be in a position to get this deal. And he hit this one and his agent right out of the ballpark.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Was there ever any point on the Leafs side where they considered moving on from Nylander because they felt the number was just too high for them?
I think only as an exercise, right? Like, okay, if we don't do this, what happens, right? Who might be the free agents we could sign? Could we maybe be, you know, Sam Reinhart's a pending UFA. Jake Gensel's a pending UFA. So I'm just trying to think of some of the other potentially offensive-minded players that you might be able to get. But then, look, at Gensel's older than Nylander. He's smaller. He's had a significant injury in the offseason, you know, whereas Nylander's had a pretty healthy career to this point. And there's no guarantee those players want to come to you, and there's no guarantee they're not re-signed where they currently play. And so, you know, and I think pretty quickly they were able to conclude the trade market probably isn't for them. They don't have a lot to trade right now. They have some first round picks they could look to move, you know, maybe prospects, but you know, prospects, you know, own teams tend to value their own prospects more than the way other teams do. Right. So I think that you have to go through that exercise, but I don't have any reason to believe they really thought about it. I mean, ultimately, we get to a day like today because they decided the guy was irreplaceable in the ways that you would replace him. And, you know, I got the sense that the Leafs know the contract is high. They know what everyone's saying around the league. I mean, I can tell you, I couldn't find one person who was ready to stand up and be like, that's a good contract for William Nylander from a team perspective that works for other teams. Now, I did have lots of reasonable executives that I speak to say, you know, I wouldn't want him to give him that contract, but I also, in the same situation, I probably would decide the same thing. So, you know, I don't think that they were ever close or thinking too seriously about moving on from him. But, you know, before you sign a $92 million contract, a lot of work goes in terms of figuring out, you know, what are your other options? What else might we consider here? And, you know, it's clear the Leafs decided they were going to bite the bullet and sign the player.
This has to work for them, man. If they are committed to, and here's the thing, I think William Nylander deserves that money, and you have made excellent points with how he's played for this team over the last few years, specifically in those playoff runs where guys like Marner and Matthews were not playing at a high level when he was. But if you're committing all that money, especially to Matthews and Nylander over the next few years, if you keep Marner, if you find a way to keep John Tavares, who said today he wants to stay in Toronto, and this doesn't work, people are going to look at the Toronto Maple Leafs as an example of how not to build a team in the salary cap era. There's a lot riding on this team. There's a lot riding on this organization. This contract has to work. There has to be a Stanley Cup at the end of all of this. That's basically how I see it.
I wouldn't take any issue with any of those thoughts. I mean, and the margins get a little smaller, like that the more you're paying more players, you need to hope those players stay productive. You need them to stay healthy. And obviously, just given the nature of hockey, I mean, it's hard to guarantee those things. But they're doubling and tripling down. At the end of the day, like I wish we had a sport at times. This is not connected directly to Nylander, where there were far more trades and far more ways to readjust on the fly, but you don't see a lot of that, right? I mean, really what you see mostly is teams trying to hold on to their top assets. Obviously, it's more mid-range trades, I'd say, we see, or even lower range in terms of roster in the league for the most part. I mean, we can point to a Tkachuk, Huberto, Uyghur deal because it's the outlier. It's not, you know, and that already happened a year and a half ago, so we're not seeing this all the time. Free agency just is not a place where the smart teams get better. I don't see anyone ever signing a free agent that truly turns the tables for them. I mean, it's been years since we could point to that. I mean, you might have to go back to like Zdeno Chara leaving Ottawa for Boston just because of the run he had in Boston and how immediately impactful he was for the Bruins. And they won a cup and went to two others. I mean, there's just not a lot of examples of that with the way that the game's gone. And let's face it. I mean, William Nylander would have been the top free agent on July 1st, 2024. Well, now he's already off the board. You know, we'll see what happens with Reinhart in Florida. You know, there's a world where we still see another couple signings from players that are potential free agents. And so, you know, you just don't have the best way to address your team that way. And so I can kind of see why teams do this. And look, it's working some other places right now. I mean, the Winnipeg Jets are at the top of the NHL at this very moment. And actually, remember, we were recording the pod live when news dropped that they had extended, Connor Hellebuyck and Mark Scheifele. I remember your initial gut reaction, like before you'd process anything, was like, why would they do this? And you know, the Jets are a specific case too, because there probably wouldn't be a free agent destination anyway, given just being the NHL's smallest market and being in Canada, taxes, everything that goes into that. Some people don't like cold weather, all those things. But, you know, it's looking like a good move at this point in time. They got pretty good return on Pierre-Luc Dubois, even though he wanted out and was only willing to go one of two places. So I suppose I think that there's enough examples of doubling, tripling, quadrupling down on your core can pay off. And that's what the Leafs are doing. It's a new GM. But, you know, Brad Treliving, like so much of this was already kind of put in motion before he took this job, right? I mean, part of this negotiation was William Nylander pointing to his teammates and saying, well, you paid Mitch Marner almost $11 million years ago. You're not going to pay me $11 million now. And, you know, in a season where I'm outperforming him or at least performing at least as well as him, all those types of things. I mean, a lot of the things that come up in these talks, yeah, Brad Treliving didn't have anything to do with the decisions made on Nylander's second deal, Marner's second deal, but he still has to work under the parameters of those decisions. And I just think he looked at it and didn't see any better path to trying to win a Stanley Cup by moving on from Nylander, and hence Nylander gets what he wants.
I'm trying to get you to empty the clip as much as you can on any Nylander-related stuff. Is there anything else you want to add before I get you to kind of do a really quick roundup of some other topics? And maybe I get you a question or two for Ask CJ.
You know, I would say this, and we try not to get too into the numbers sometimes on the pod, but, you know, this is the first contract that has been signed since Gary Bettman confirmed at the Board of Governors meeting that the salary cap next year is going up to $87.675 million. You know, it's basically the first meaningful salary cap jump that we've seen since before the pandemic. And, you know, a factor in this negotiation that we haven't hit on is that, you know, back in June, a player or his agent might be guessing, hey, like, it looks like the cap's going to go up next year. But it wasn't, you know, that wasn't formalized. By the time that gets formalized in December, you know, you're going to start hearing about agents saying percentage of the cap. And so William Nylander's deal, I think, is 13.26% of the cap from when he signed it. That's anticipating next year's cap at 87.6 and change. And, you know, that's actually less percentage of the cap than David Pastrnak got when he signed. It's less of the cap even than Mitch Marner got at the time of his signing, less of the cap than Panarin. And so I think we're going to have to get used to this idea as more and more big names do start signing contracts. You're going to say, well, how could William Nylander get more money than David Pastrnak? And, you know, Pastrnak's won a rocket and, you know, has scored at a point per game throughout his career, has better sort of platform statistics. We're going to have to get used to the percentage of the salary cap stuff, which I realize might be a little too in the weeds for some people, but it does matter because, you know, you're making that when Nylander makes this decision, he's made a decision to take 13.26% of the cap for next year. But as the cap goes up, he's actually going to be counting less against that number. But new future players will be trying to match his 13.26, but they might be getting paid over $12 million at some point. So I don't know if that translates well if you're listening to this and you're out for a walk with your dog and you're just on the headphones. You're like, what are you talking about, CJ?
This is math.
I was told there would be no math.
No math.
But I'm just trying to prepare everyone for the idea that you're going to start to hear more and more of this, especially when we get to, you know, Draisaitl is a year and a half out from his new contract needing to be done. Mitch Marner's in the same spot. It's 2.5 years till you've got Connor McDavid set to expire. I mean, as more and more of the elite players in the league, obviously at a certain point, we're going to be talking about Connor Bedard's second deal and a number of other guys. So, you know, get used to the percentage of cap when looking at these deals. It's no longer just, well, this player got 11.25, which is David Pastrnak's deal. How did Nylander get more? I mean, he actually is taking less of the cap at the time he's signing it. I'll get off. I'm not putting any of this forward as a justification for the Leafs decision. You know, quite honestly, I think that there's definitely some risk attached to it. I'm not skirting that, but it is a factor in how they got to where they got to, is that he actually is taking technically a contract below what Pastrnak took when he took it, if that makes sense.
I that does, CJ. This episode of the Chris Johnston Show is brought to you by Liquid IV. We're in 2024. You're going to hear a lot of people doing the whole new year, new me, but don't reinvent yourself for the new year. All you have to do is just rehydrate yourself with Liquid IV. With 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, Liquid IV hydrates 2 times faster than water alone, all in a single sugar-free stick. So you can feel like a hydrated new you, ready to take on 2024. It's really easy to put together. All you have to do, get yourself a glass of water, get yourself the stick, pour it in all these great flavors, white peach, green grape, lemon, lime. They're really tasty. They're really great to drink. And you get yourself hydrated. Very convenient packaging as well. Gives you a whole bunch of energy. And again, they taste really great. 1 stick, 16 ounces of water, 3 times the electrolytes, no artificial sweeteners, 8 vitamins, and non-GMO and free from gluten, dairy, and soy. Rehydrate yourself for the new year. Grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use the code Johnston at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code Johnston at liquidiv.com.
Okay, I feel like I know for today, we're recording this on a Monday. It's been a couple hours since the news was announced with Nylander. You've definitely been in the weeds with covering the story. I'll just go to a question I've asked CJ, and the episode we'll have later this week, we'll get to some of the other stuff. How about that?
Sounds like a good one, bud.
Yeah, I just feel like I just want to make sure your brain is at 100% here.
Energized. It was a fun day.
That's good. That's good. I just want to make sure you're good.
I have to say, as much as, you know, obviously having three different employers between the pod and my TSN work and my writing at The Athletic, so you're busy on a day like this. Like, I love being in the weeds of a big story, or, you know, breaking news. You know, it's good for the soul, because some days are just Tuesdays in January and it's hard to kind of get too jazzed up about whatever you might be working on. But when it's a big story and people care about it, you see the engagement online. I mean, it's fun to be in on a story like this.
You have three employees. I think this is the first time in the CJ Show era you have more jobs than me.
Wow. You be slipping, bud. You're slipping. You're getting lazy.
Don't worry. I got an announcement. I know. Don't worry. I have an announcement coming next week. A third job is on the way. This gets this question from Valkyrie 007. For both Julian and CJ, if you could add an event to the All-Star Weekend, what would it be? Who would you want to participate in it? It doesn't have to be just for the players. It could be for players, GMs, refs, mascots, etc.
Oh, man. Do you have your answer? Because you've been sitting on this. I haven't thought about it yet.
Give me a second. I do not have an answer for this.
I will say this. I'm excited by the return of the draft. I'm old enough to have covered those years where we had the draft in Raleigh and Columbus.
Was that like a decade ago? You're back in it. Seems as if it was like 20, 30 years ago.
It feels like a long. I mean, it was pre-pandemic, so it's PP. It's hard to remember.
Okay, we get it. You don't like the pandemic.
No, I'm just saying it was a different world ago. So I'm glad that's back. I'm intrigued to see how this will go with the skills competition. Like, I hate to say that I'm actually optimistic about it. Like, I think the players are going to care. I think.
I want them to.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the whole goal, right? That's putting the incentive in front of them. It's making them compete in multiple events. You know, like, you're kind of out there. You're all in if you're doing it. And I like the NBA players, I feel like they care when it gets to dunk contests and like, you know what I mean? Like,
That's kind of hit or miss. I think there are years where it's all about the people who participate in those contests for the slam dunk contest. Cause you get some years where you get a couple no names and they care, but the dunks also aren't that good too. It's only like every 3-4 years where you get someone who's really innovative and everyone falls in love with the contest again. And then you go through another couple years where it's not good. And then you go through another year where it's good. It's really hit or miss.
Gotcha. So, I mean, maybe the only event I'd add is getting all of our friends in one room and getting on stage and doing a pod or something like that. That would be pretty fun.
Oh, I need to do that.
It'd be nice. We could interview a mascot if we needed, or bring a player up. Although I don't know that that would be that interesting necessarily. So, but I think it'd be fun to, you know, for me, the All-Star weekend, quite honestly, a lot of it is about the socializing and networking. You know, just it does feel a little bit like a hockey convention type of deal. It's a good time. None of it's that serious. You know, the last few years have been in warmer locations. We were in South Florida last year. We were in Vegas the year before that. So Toronto won't quite tick that. But, I mean, look at it. I think it'll still be kind of a cool event. And, you know, I was sad to see Connor Bedard get injured for a number of reasons.
Yeah.
You know, obviously with the jaw, broken jaw that he suffered. But, you know, it doesn't look good for him to get to All-Star weekend now. And that's too bad, because you could have had this world where you have, you know, McKinnon, McDavid, Matthews, Bedard. Like, it's kind of like a real generational moment that was going to come together there. I was dreaming of all of them going in that skills competition. I don't know if they were all willing to commit to it, but it could have been pretty cool. Unfortunately, I know Connor is going to have a chance to be in many, many All-Star games, but, you know, we don't know how many more Crosby and the like will be around for. So, I think it's going to be a good time. And I guess the only event, which is clearly not the spirit of the question, was wouldn't mind a live pod or something. That might be fun.
From Eric, what are the longest and shortest runs during the CJ run streak?
The longest is I did a full marathon on the year anniversary of my run streak. So April 29th, 2021. I ran 42.2 kilometers. The shortest, it's either 4 or 5K. I don't know. I have run 5K for sure for a couple, like on a couple days when I'm squeezed for time or something's going on and I just have to get it done. I'm trying to think if I've gone shorter than that. There's not one that comes to mind. Like it's not like there's a day I did half a K to say I did it. So, you know, I'd say 5K probably is the shortest, unless I'm forgetting one. And if I am, it's only because I'm almost 4 years into this thing and it's hard to remember every day.
Okay. May have time for maybe one more. From the proposed Four Nations rosters, Canada has really fallen behind in goaltending relative to other top-end talent. What in your mind has changed in Canada's development system in such that we haven't had an elite goalie breakout in quite a while? This is from George on Discord.
I'll say, George, it's a valid question, and I would concur with your thesis. I feel like goaltending, we could do a 6-part series on like what is going on with goaltending. Like how many teams, like top end teams, are getting sub average goaltending? How many, you know, once reliable goaltenders have become less reliable? Obviously, the overall save percentage in a league is at its lowest point in about 20 years right now. It feels like the scales have just turned in favor of the shooters and in favor of the offensive players, and goaltenders for the most part are having a difficult time. It's obviously, I feel like it's never been less predictable about who's going to be great. I mean, you know, there's certain players like a Connor Hellebuck that have kind of been consistently well above the pack and remain there today. But I think goaltending is worthy of, I don't think there's an easy answer. I don't think there's one answer, and I certainly don't profess to have the answer, but I can tell you that, you know, we've got 5 or 6 teams now carrying 3 goalies, which would once have been unthinkable. Now kind of seems normal. And you know, you have someone like Martin Jones in Toronto, just named the second star of the week. Like he passed through waivers to start the season, you know, was in the AHL for, you know, 20 odd games that the Marlies played. So, and then has come up and played really well for the Leafs. So I just feel like it's very hard for a goalie to be consistently dominant. I don't know what Canada's done. I think Finland probably is asking itself the same questions. There was a period in time there where it felt like every elite goalie was coming from Finland, and you know, things have dropped off there. I mean, they still have Jussi Saros, they have Ville Husso, you know, Kevin Lankinen, but they're not right at the top of the league anymore. You know, with Henrik Lundqvist retiring, you've still got Linus Ullmark from Sweden, but like Sweden, it feels like aren't as dominant. If any country has produced consistently high level NHL goaltenders in the last 10 years, it's Russia, right? I mean, some of the absolute best goaltenders we've seen entering the league, starting with Vasilevsky, Shesterkin,
Sorokin,
like there's anything. It feels like Russia's, I don't know if they've found something, if this is a cycle in time. I don't have the answer. I do think this, I'm not a parent, but if I was a hockey parent, I'm not sure I'd want my kid playing goal. I just think that it's a really pressure packed position. It can be a difficult position to play in. Obviously there's only two on a team and there's only one on the ice at a given moment in time. So maybe what we're having in Canada is more parents steering their kids to playing other positions on the ice.
Or playing other sports too.
Yes.
Yes.
Like pickleball.
Yes.
The sport of our future.
Everyone should play. Yes. Yeah. Pickleball segments to come on the future of this show, in addition to a live show in Toronto, hopefully sometime next month. Let's just put that out there in the universe. Why not?
It feels a little late to do that, but let's manifest. Why not? It's still the start of a month, the start of the year. Let's think good thoughts.
Yeah. We'll be back later this week with a brand new episode of the CJ Show. CJ, great work on the William Nylander story, as always, with all of the great work that you do. You killed it today. Have yourself a break before you go off and do something else.
Thank you. I don't know if I killed it, but it was a fun day. As I said, I was down at practice, was part of the scrums with Brad Treliving, William Nylander, and others. You know, $92 million. I don't know if we mentioned the richest contract by total value in Maple Leafs history. So,
yeah,
that's it's a big deal, and I think that's why it's generated so much opinion. You know, and it's a higher number than anyone would have predicted, I think, back in June. Like if we had done a poll back then, like of fans, of our listeners, of NHL executives, but then, you know, it starts to make more sense based on how the 3 or 4 months of the season have gone so far. So
there was a time when $10 million per for William Nylander was considered too expensive.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like the one benefit, they might've got him in the tens, might. I can't even say it with absolute certainty had they done it last summer, but then that might, you know, there's risk. There's always risk. And as I said, William Nylander could have had a slow start. He could have got injured. Just lots of things could have went wrong. And you're like, oh man, he was dumb not to take $9.5 million last summer. So this is kind of the name of the game. And those of us on the media side, we always get the benefit of commenting on everything after the fact, instead of actually being in there making the decisions.
Oh yeah. We're going to be talking about this contract and whatever happens with the Toronto Maple Leafs for a very long time. But we'll be here to do it here on the CJ Show. Subscribe to our podcast, whether on the SDPN YouTube channel or through Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. For CJ, I'm Julian. So long.
The Chris Johnston Show. Inside the game, twice a week. Follow Chris on Twitter @ReporterChris. And follow Julian McKenzie @JKMcKenzie.